You all came highly recommended. You know the rules. No real names, no backstories, no cell phones.
So whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer.
I'm here to make sure you're safe.
What's your name? Mine's Abigail.
You can call me Joey.
Do you have any kids?
I have a little boy.
See you in 24 hours.
Do you know what a Pinky promise is? If you behave and do as we say, like Pinky promise you, it'll all be over soon.
Joey?
Yeah?
I'm sorry about what's gonna happen to you.
What the fuck?
Shit, we gotta get out of here.
I think she knows something.
Guys? We kidnapped a fucking vampire. A ballerina vampire. Okay, how do we kill a vampire? What are we talking about? Like an Anne Rice or a True Blood? You know, Twilight? Stake through the heart.
Daylight is a big one.
All right, let's go kill us a fucking vampire. Ready?
Welcome back to the Cinemania World Podcast, everyone. My name is Dwayne, and today we have a very special episode of the Cinemania Nightmares show where we will be doing nightmare reviews for Abigail and a little quick one for The First Omen because I finally watched it and I'm excited to talk about it. But first, before we get into all that, I am joined by some guests from the Cinemania World team. First, we have from the Nightmares show, Nightmares team, we have Tyler. Tyler, hello, how are you?
Hello, it's great to be back talking some horror, especially a film like this, like Abigail, because, I mean, I was really excited ever since it was announced. That first trailer got me hyped, so it's great that we're finally actually talking about the movie now.
Yeah, it's very good to have you here on this show to talk about some Abigail. And we are also joined from the Box Office Report show, back on another non-Box Office, non-Cinemania World show. We have Larry here. Larry, how are you?
Hello. We are back to talk about the Black Swan prequel.
Oh, okay then.
Larry, they're always playing that Swan Lake music, and it's like, I mean, I live. It's actually really good, like, cinematic music, that motif they use, but yes.
Yes, and they got you here on a Nightmare show. The first time? Is that true? I think so.
Right? I don't know. Well, that seems kind of wild.
Yeah, well.
I feel like out of our team, like the core team, the three of us here are the ones who watch like the most horror.
That's facts. Yeah. That's facts. Yeah, it's probably true.
That's wild if this is my first one. Hey, how's it going?
It's very good to have you here as well. And yeah, everyone, we're talking about Abigail today for the Nightmare show, and I just watched it, and now we're going to talk about it a little bit here. But before we get into our official review, here is the bio per IMDb. After a group of criminals kidnap the ballerina daughter of a powerful underworld figure, they retreat to an isolated mansion, unaware that they're locked inside with no normal little girl. to say vampire. Anyway, it was directed by Radio Silence, produced by Radio Silence. We have Matt Bettinelli open and Tyler Gillett, of course, from Ready or Not, Scream 2022, and Scream 6. And yeah, it's our next venture into a bombastic horror film. And we, of course, with stars Melissa Barrera, Alicia Ware, who plays Abigail. We have Catherine Newton. And we have Dan Stevens here for our core cast. So I'll go around, get you guys' thoughts on the film. I'll start with you, Tyler. What did you think about Abigail?
Oh, man. I mean, I had a blast with it. I mean, it gave me pretty much everything that I wanted out of a movie like this. Because these days, you know, especially in the horror genre, we don't get too many bombastic, over-the-top vampire movies, or really many vampire movies in general, because I mean, we had that wave for, I guess, after Twilight, and then that kind of died, and now that subgenre is kind of taking a back seat, so hopefully we're kind of reinvigorating that fun vampire genre again, the From Dusk Till Dawns, the Fright Nights, the Lost Boys, but just talking about strictly Abigail, I overall thought it was a really great blend of humor and scares, because I mean, it's, I guess you could also just say that's kind of like Radio Silence's formula, their niche, and I think that they've almost perfected that niche to this point, the way that they blend it with the Scream films and Ready or Not and now Abigail. I think it's the most complete version of their formula yet, in the way that they blend them together, because it was a exhilarating, nasty blood, you know, cannons, buckets of blood massacre inside of this place, and it was nuts, but I was having such a great time because the ensemble cast were pretty interesting characters, while also just having a lot of fun with the dialogue in the house. And yeah, I mean, Alicia Weir as Abigail, I mean last year I would say, I guess, the new horror icon on the block was Megan, and I feel like if there's going to be a new horror icon for this year, I think Abigail right now currently is a strong contender.
I hate to chill on my girl Megan, man.
Hey, I mean, I like both a lot. I mean, it's tough to put them, I guess, together, you know, side by side, compare the two, which one's better than the other. But I mean, I think they're both great in their own way.
I guess what stops Megan from being like, I think she made a mainstay as far as, you know, last year goes. Was it last year? Or was it the day before?
It was last, depending on, I guess, who you talked to, it was last year.
Oh, right. Oh, don't want to get to that. Anyway, I think what stopped her from being like a complete horror mainstay was that PG-13 rating.
Yeah, exactly. It was dialed back a bit.
Yeah, it was very dialed back. And Abigail in this one, I mean, holy smokes. It's just like
brutal, just complete brutality.
Yeah, it is blood and guts and just mayhem. And they love that explosive blood, huh?
it was probably the most blood out of all their movies. I mean, we saw in Ready or Not a lot where they would have these characters just literally explode into giant buckets of blood, but I think they definitely did that a lot more in this compared to Ready or Not.
Let's go to you, Larry. What did you think about Abigail?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with Abigail. I really love a good campy horror comedy type of atmosphere, and I do feel like recently that's kind of had a resurgence, which I've really appreciated, and good movies, or at least movies I enjoy. I've been coming out of this resurgence, and while I don't think Abigail goes like, well, I don't know, it gets pretty campy in some areas, but I don't know, it just showcases Radio Silence's fun nature. They don't take themselves so seriously. I feel like that in the Scream movies that they did, Ready or Not, and now this, they have this effervescence to their horror, this kind of glee to their horror. While they're all really bloody, all of them, I don't know, they just have fun with it. And Abigail really personified that. I think Alicia Ware is fantastic as Abigail in this movie. Melissa Barrera with Radio Silence is a great matchup. I think they get each other, and they know how to use Melissa in these films really well. And Dan Stevens, I mean, if you put a camera in front of him, he's going to chew that scenery to no end. And I lived for it here in this movie.
he's 2 for 2 this year so far between this and Godzilla X Kong.
Yeah, he has like show-stealing moments in both of those films. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to see him kind of returning to the horror genre, because we got like The Guest years ago, which he was also fantastic in. And he's made for something like this, like where he gets to be this over-the-top, ridiculous type of sleazy guy. And it just works. But I agree. I love the exploding bodies. They do. They love to just, I'm surprised Ghostface like stabbing someone didn't just make them explode in the screen movies, because that is their jam.
I have to imagine they definitely tried, but they
it just wouldn't have made sense. I know they were probably itching at the bit to like not explode,
try dying to explode. They're like, what if Dewey explodes in this moment?
I mean when you think of like Scream kills, you know, the history of Scream and like the most nasty kills, over the top kills, like most of them are pretty normal because they're, you know, Ghostface are normal people. So yeah, I think it'd be probably at least out of left field if they exploded.
It would have been great if like they did something where it was in a stab movie and someone explodes or something. And
oh, that would have been a nice nod to their, like, to the, yeah.
But
like the flamethrower in the
Yes. But this was also the soundtrack. I know I mentioned it obviously already with, you know, the Swan Lake song, but I thought the score in general was really good, and the incorporation of just the soundtrack period was really well done. So the music, top notch. And I love the banter, particularly between Abigail and the other people. Some of the banter between the people themselves I wasn't the biggest fan of.
Yeah, I was gonna get into that. Yeah.
But Abigail, she was kind of like trolling them. Oh,
she's speaking, it's great. Because I don't want to spoil, but there's a part where like everybody in the room is bantering and like screaming at each other. And Abigail in a corner is just like, all right. And, you know, and then that's when, like, it's like the reveal, and it's like so great. I love that scene. But I agree. There was a couple of times where, like, our characters are, like, trying to read each other. And I was like, man, this is going on way too long, brother. Because everyone's here for, like, the vampire craziness, you know? I get the idea of trying to flesh out your characters, especially your lead. But we're trying to get to that. And I saw a lot of reactions throughout the week for people that watched it early saying that it starts slow. And I was like, how can a movie like this start slow? And then I'm like, well, yeah, you know, because you don't really see the vampire-ness of it come out until maybe, I want to say, 30 minutes?
It's about like 35 to 40 minutes.
And it's just like our characters, and I don't think our characters are strong enough to hold like just, you know, conversations between them. I think some of them are, you know, like of course Melissa Barrera. I thought I actually really liked Melissa Barrera in this movie.
Me too.
Dan Stevens, of course, that was a fun bit, but then when you get into you know.
Oh girl.
It does make me wonder. It's a very minimal percentage of people that are seeing Abigail that are this way, but I would be really intrigued on how people received the movie that didn't know the twist. Like if they went into this having not seen the trailers, and they're like, and then, you know, that reveal kicks in like 40 minutes in, like, oh crap, this little girl is a vampire.
That's why I said, like,
it's the issue of having to market it.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't sell the movie without it. Like, I understand why you have to show it in that marketing, because if you don't,
I mean, nobody's
it's
going
really
to it.
Hard to sell this movie if you don't give it away. But then you're watching the movie and the first 40 minutes, you're like, I don't know. It feels kind of weird because you're like, I know we all know what the twist is.
It's not built in the same fashion as like the first Orphan film. Where there was a whole mystery on like Esther has a secret. What is it? Watch the movie and find out.
Or you can't even sell it like a Netflix show, like a TV series where you're like, oh, here's a new series coming out. It's like a horror mystery, kind of like Midnight Mass.
Oh, yeah.
You know how like that there's a whole mystery with that. And then there's a big reveal of what these people are that really sells the entire series as a whole. And you go back and shit makes sense now. As far as a film, you kind of, without Abigail, I mean, the title, without like that leading the marketing, it's like you got nothing. I mean, you don't really have anything type of, you know, I don't really know how they would market this without Abigail, you know. And what would you, I don't know. If I feel like the title, why is that, you know, people,
I feel like confused. They didn't really try to market it in any other fashion. Every single poster is just her.
They could have, I mean, I guess they could have made it kind of a haunted house type of, like, these people get stuck in this house that pull off this heist, something's in here with them, you know, like they maybe could have tried something like that and we could have seen what happened. But yeah, they pretty much were like, nah, we're selling it as the ballerina vampire. Yeah. Like,
in the marketing, absolutely.
That's why they were like, nah, we have to do it.
Well, that's why it was interesting, because they start off as they're building up that mystery, there is like a kill or two that are in the shadows, and it's like, what is going on? Who is doing this? And it's like,
the intrigue wasn't there 100% just because of like people are just dropping dead, and then you're like, well, brother, I mean, I know who's doing it, but I mean, it's a tough, you know, kind of thing to be, you know, to try to capitalize, because the marketing does have to give it away for the marketing. It's one of those movies that you would, because like, for instance, it's not really the same thing, but I don't know, like Long Legs is not telling anyone what it's about.
I still have no idea what that is. But...
Yeah, and I think that's better. I think I'm excited about that, but I think that's going to unfortunately really, really not help the box office. But then it's like Neon doesn't really get major box office. Like, we were like praising Immaculate for doing like 5 million. Like, they're not expecting a big box office with this, but I love what they're doing for the marketing. But the marketing is not going to lead to, like, maybe the intrigue would be enough for people to be like, what? Because they played that newest trailer before Abigail, and I'm just like, I have fallen in love with the way they're marketing the film. Like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And I'm just so I'm so hyped regarding that, because we don't get enough of those, you know. I have to sacrifice something.
I think to your point earlier, Dwayne, the other unfortunate part is we're talking about Dan Stevens, and I know you're trying to read her, but we're talking about Catherine Newton. Their characters in the first act, like when we're in the kind of mystery part, aren't really that interesting. Like Dan Stevens, you're kind of like, oh my god, get him off my screen a little bit, because his character's annoying. Mm-hmm. And Catherine doesn't really get anything to do. It's when the vampire stuff starts unraveling that both of those actors get to shine. Like, they get big moments after that. Like, there's there's a moment that they kind of show in the trailer where I'll just say Catherine Newton does a dance that I lived for, that I thought
I did like that
part. That was wild.
And there's another one where she's in a pool, and I'll just say that as well, that I thought was great.
Nasty.
But and then Dan Stevens, we're not even going to talk about what he gets to do in the third act, but he gets to go ham and go off, and I live. But in the first act, I think maybe the problem is that they're all secretive. Like, they have to be secretive because they're on this job, so they can't talk about what's going on. And that kind of builds up a different reveal, but it's just not that interesting of a reveal. Like, the reveal that you do get from them being secretive and not being able to talk about who they are, it's just not that interesting.
It's a little mid. I would say that's where I say, like, I think I messaged you guys, like, that's where I say the story gets a little muddled. I just wanted the vampires to just cause some mayhem, and, you know, I didn't need no underlining kind of story, but I get, as a writer, I understand, to make the story as strong as possible, you want to give something else than just here's the mayhem. And I think, you know, listen, you guys are saying something happens to two characters. I sort of wish that happened to our lead, just for the vibes, just for like, I don't want to get into spoilers, but just for the sake of just for the sake of the team up. I mean, I thought that was about to happen. I was about to be like, oh my, and then I was gonna get into like Nun 2 territory. I'm like, oh, yes, man. But then it doesn't happen. I'm like, okay. It was still good.
There was a lot of stuff that I had a blast with. I mean, there's one scene in particular where they're trying to go through the motions on actually trying to fight Abigail, and she just they all try to run into a room and take her out, and she kicks all their asses.
Oh, they get tucked. They get all get like just folded. It was crazy.
Like they lost a 3v1 with ease.
I think that's what's so fun about it is, again, Abigail as a character really sold a lot of it, and I think Ware's physical performance is really fun because you can do a lot. Like that's the cool thing about like a ballerina and a dancer, mm-hmm. is that you can do a lot of like cool body stuff. And she and the directors, and obviously probably CGI for some of the stuff, just works so well with what she's doing.
Are we gonna admit though that this is very Megan coded, this movie? Ooh. Larry, no, don't act surprised, Larry. I've been saying it since box office. I was like, no disrespect. No movie idea is like new. Unless, I don't know. No movie idea is really new anymore. So I could imagine this Megan clip went viral. The dancing. What can we do to kind of capitalize, like another character, a young girl. Let's make her a ballerina, but it's, you know, let's not do a slasher type of thing. Let's make her a vampire. I don't know, man. It is literally a part where she's dancing in the hallway. I said, this is Megan coded. I just want some respect on Megan. That's all.
It's tough because I feel like, I mean, there's some similarities, but I guess you can go a lot harsher with this movie and give
for sure,
because it's an R rating, and also because Megan does have some iconic moments and fun lines of dialogue and even battles in her movie. But I feel like Alicia Weir, also is the fact that character is supposed to be like a robot, so there's not really like a lot of personality to the character.
That's true.
I feel like Alicia Weir, at least it's a multi-layered performance because of the fact that, you know, she keeps slipping in between being this like scared little girl, and then she can just turn on a dime into being like this vicious, sadistic villain that revels in torturing these people as they're trying. Literally, it's like a cat and mouse style game where they're locked inside and she's just terrorizing them as much as she can.
Literally just playing games the whole movie.
I did like the part where she's dancing with a headless person. And then they all come in and she's like, let's just talk in her like in her normal voice. Yeah. And then she gets into the vampire stuff and just whoops their ass. Yeah, it was great.
That is kind of a weird thing. Like, I know that it's during the like mystery part. Mm-hmm. There's two kind of gruesome would-be kills that happen off screen. That are probably two of the more brutal kills in the whole movie. First two kills that happen, we don't see it. We just kind of see the aftermath of it, and these people are like mangled as we build up to
reveal. I do think it's kind of wild to think that Megan killed that person and then put them in the chair and then set their body up to be found.
This is some damn Michael Myers-ish, putting people in swings and shit with like, no, she's...
I just like the fact that she is like super strong because she's a vampire. So that, you know, once you get into the lore of all of it, which is something that I wanted a little bit more of, was like lore and not why and how this is kind of... They get to why these people are here. But I wanted a little more about like where are you coming from,
or like a backstory, like with like some kind of backstory, and
so we need a sequel,
or even a prequel. I guess
even a prequel.
Hold on now,
the orphan got a prequel.
We're gonna get it. Let's come on, y'all. Get to the movie theater. Get that box office up. So me and Tyler specifically, we need another one. We need Abigail to live on.
It's definitely, it's weird because, like, I feel like this movie, I mean, as great of a time as I did have, like, I would also be okay if it didn't have a sequel, but I would also be there for a sequel anyways. Mm-hmm. But it ends in such a way where, like, I don't know where you would go for a sequel. Like, I mean, it would be a very weird setup for a sequel. Like, I'm sure it can be done. Stranger things have happened in Hollywood. If a movie makes enough money, they'll find some way to make another film, but. It would be
bring in Celine from Underworld.
Oh, you want to cross over with other franchises?
What in the hell is there?
I mean, it's Universal, so I mean, I guess they could actually just, you know, since Dwayne brought up Megan, they could just have Megan fight Abigail, right?
Yo, Megan would get whopped. No disrespect to my girl. Megan will get mollywopped, man, by his damn.
You just, yeah, I mean, we saw how
Megan can get strong into, like, other devices, though. It's all
that's
right.
True. That's
our
true.
Our girl, she lives on.
I don't think there was really much technology in that house. Wow. Other than that one specific room that controlled everything. It's like an old-timey house. Although that was funny as hell. When everything got locked down, and then you had Kevin Durant trying to run at the gates he thought he could open it that way. That whole sequence made me laugh. That was like some of the humor in the movie that I think was the most funny, where they're trying to gather all of their supplies and figure out the lore of the vampires, and they're all incredibly terrible and kind of dumb in that sequence, because like Catherine Newton.
Oh, they make a lot of dumb decisions.
Catherine Newton comes back with onions and not garlic.
Oh, I actually thought that was a really funny. Listen, I'll give her flowers. I howled when he's like, especially Dan Stevens's delivery. He's like, Sammy, those are fucking onions, and she's like, well, I did howl. I was crying. Okay,
Kevin Durant had some really funny moments. I mean, he was of the comedic stuff. I think a lot of his goofy one liners made me laugh the most.
Somebody said, I keep seeing Elon Musk. And that's all I could see.
I mean, I do. I think people have been saying that since the first trailer, and I definitely understand it. Like a buff Elon Musk.
I say, oh Lord, he does look.
Yeah. Dwayne, all right.
Come on with your give Abigail her flower.
I had fun. What you mean? I had fun.
I do think the third act was much more wild than I anticipated, just because
that's why I lived.
Out of all the stuff that they showed in the trailers, I mean, we saw the one trailer for forever. I feel like they didn't really hint at like anything that would go down in that third act.
I just really wanted someone to turn into a vampire. It would have been lit if we had two vampires going up against. I mean, come on, man.
It was like almost like a Marvel final battle.
That's what I got it to, like Nun 2 kind of vibes. They had like Nun 2, they brought out like a Mjolnir type of thing, and the nun is floating and Irene is floating. That's what I wanted. I was like, man, if fucking blank could get these powers
wild experience though, because I mean, the entire cast is really going through it, but I think Melissa Barrera's character probably, I mean, Catherine Newton probably went through the worst up until a point, but then, Melissa, you know, being, you know, in a, whatever you call it, like a body pit with, I mean, that's really what it was. It's in the trailer, so I don't
know. Listen, like, Tyler, like, you know what Dragon Ball Z is? If Abigail and Blank would have fused, and then, like, then, I don't know, man. I just wanted something bombastic.
There was a lot of bombastic stuff there in the third act. But I mean, they really
How
went there.
How do you feel about them using the reflection for a certain death scene in here? They used a damn, like, serving platter.
That was dope, though. I like that.
To reflect the light.
I hollered.
Yeah, that was dope. man, I just wanted, if we're doing, like, everybody, man, I'm spoiling. But if we're doing, like, vampires everywhere, I wanted everybody to be, I don't know.
well some characters didn't get to be vampires that I was disappointed that didn't make it.
Yeah, like my whole world, man.
That was not who I was thinking of. I was thinking like, oh, I really like this character, and then they unceremoniously die.
Any final thoughts, guys? I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't know anything I'm hating. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, I thought I'd buy it on 4K, watch it again a couple times. I know it's going to be on Paramount. Is it Paramount or Universal?
It's Universal.
You know, so it'll be on, probably on Peacock at some point.
Yeah, Peacock, yeah.
You know, watch that in 4K. And yeah, I had a good time. I thought the score, the sound bar for that movie is going to be great because my theater was thumping and I thought it was good. I didn't think I'm hating. I thought it was good.
Catherine Newton letting me live out like my old school monster fantasies this year between a Frankenstein movie and now a vampire movie. Come on, girl.
Get her in a wolf man
movie. Yes, Catherine Newton to revive. Tom Cruise moved to the side. Catherine Newton has arrived.
Get a mummy movie too. Yeah.
Why y'all setting my girl up, man?
Come on now. Wolf woman on the horizon.
Listen, like I told you before, I mean, I know we give Catherine Newton some flack sometimes for some of her other roles, but I really feel like she's much better in the wheelhouse of horror than anything else. I mean, even though I didn't like Lisa Frankenstein as much, but
yeah.
I still think that her performance was at least solid in that. And then like other stuff, you know, of course, like this film, I thought she was pretty good in. And I enjoyed Freaky, although it seems like everyone's kind of forgotten about that movie by now.
I have fun with Freaky. I have fun with
it. And then, you know, she's in one of those Paranormal Activities. I forget which one.
Yeah, 4.
Yeah. Fuck. That was a long time ago, but I mean, that was also entertaining.
Look at the Newton go.
Listen, I think she's a great person. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can tell that she has insane anxiety because I remember for Comic-Con when she just came on the stage. I was like, she just does not look comfortable at all.
Yo, I would have been scared as hell if I had some crazy anti-vaxxer hollering in my ear, too. I'd have been freaked out on that stage, too.
Fair. But I was like, she just looks not comfortable. And I can tell in certain projects, there's certain projects where she just doesn't seem like she's not comfortable in this role. And I think Quantumania was definitely one. But I think things such as like this, I think she was having a blast here. I do think she was having a blast. I think Lisa Frankenstein, she's having a blast. But then when you get her in, when you force her into like, because that's what Hollywood does, man. I don't want to get to it. But when they find a young blank one, they got to like force her in every genre. And I feel like, oh my God, it's like we had a great actress in Endgame, but fuck, look at this one. And then they got her in there. It was a disaster. I don't care what Josie says. It was a disaster. An absolute disaster. Okay, and it's like part of it is that the script is horrible. Jake does. But the other part of it is that not one time in Quantumania does she look comfortable in this role. Whereas in stuff like this, it's a small cast. It's horror. It can have some fun. It's a fucking vampire who's flying and dancing. You can have a little bit more fun and freaky. You're playing a serial killer who's like also a like 40-year-old man inside. It's fun stuff. So let's get her into more of that. You know, into more of that.
I can see your anxiety thing because a lot of her characters have that coding to them. I mean, Lisa Frankenstein is like kind of an awkward,
right?
You know, not comfortable girl.
even her character in this is like this hacker girl. So, I mean, she's obviously like a pretty awkward character. I think Radio Silence has done a pretty good job in all of their movies as far as getting the most out of their cast, whether it be even before Ready or Not in the Scream films, but I mean, especially predominantly in Ready or Not and both Scream films. I mean, we've seen pretty strong performances, I think, across the board from every film other than Ready or Not. I mean, the Scream films in this were very strong ensemble cast. I mean, Ready or Not mostly was sold on just Samara Weaving, a fantastic performance, and she was phenomenal in that. But other than that, I think they've shown, especially in those Scream films and now in this, that they can work with a great ensemble. So hopefully, maybe kind of like with Melissa Barrera, how we've now seen 3 movies in a row now, where it's Radio Silence and Melissa Barrera, maybe we can kind of adopt Catherine Newton into that family, and we can have some more Catherine Newton Radio Silence stuff, because I think that it's a good collaboration. At least the Radio Silence and Melissa Barrera stuff going forward. I don't mean,
and she's kind of found her good niche of like kind of badass horror girl.
Melissa,
covered in blood. Motherly figures.
Man, covered in blood. I love my horror. I love my horror women covered in absolute blood, just blood. If you read any of my horror scripts, by the end they're just smothered.
That's smothered. and that's what Radio Silence has done.
Yeah, and literally, like, I remember one complaint that I had with that Ellie scene in The Last of Us where she's killing David. She's not enough blood, dude. I don't know. I need my horror / whatever. I need them to be smothered.
They love a white dress covered in blood, too. We had the bride in Samara Weaving. Now we have this ballerina outfit for Abigail.
I was just watching the Fallout series, and there's a wedding dress that gets smeared in blood. That's just my vibes, man. I love all that shit.
Well,
looks like Radio Silence does, too.
Yeah, I mean, they love blowing up people and make they have way more blood in their body than anyone should actually have.
Yes, yeah, you got Abigail's talking to these folks covered in blood and dry blood and
even like it's like certain body parts getting torn off and all that stuff.
Sweet.
Too.
Great.
There is a scene with a hand.
Yeah,
that I lived for, because partially I've never really seen something like that in that way for vampire lore, but I thought it was so good.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
That whole section was another one that made me laugh, where, you know, she's trying to barter to get out of her cage Dan Stevens, and then she ends up lying again to him, because that's part of what makes her character so fun, is how manipulative she is. Even before the reveal that she's a vampire, she's already plotting and scheming and manipulating them, trying to get them to fight each other. And then, you know, as they're fighting each other in the room, that's why it's funny as hell, because as they're all fighting to the death in the room, mad at each other, she just decides to get out of her cuffs and turn into a vampire.
I love that scene. That's the part I was talking about, where she's just like, it's kind of just gets out of the dam. It's so great. It's so great. All right, everyone, that's our review for Abigail. We're gonna move right in to our quick review for The First Omen, because I finally watched it, and I gotta let Larry and Tyler know what the deal is, because apparently they're not on my level again with this one. Same as The Nun 2, but we'll get into it in a moment. We'll be back in a moment with more Cinemania Nightmares. Stand by.
You don't have to be afraid. God has great plans for you. This child is his way.
There's this girl at the orphanage. I think that she really needs someone to look out for her.
Carlita suffers from a touch of madness.
You must be very careful, Margaret. Bad things will start to happen around her. Evil things.
It's all for you. No, don't. What does any of this have to do with Carlita?
This church has maintained power for thousands of years. Lady will stop at nothing to keep it that way. How do you control people who no longer believe? You create something to fear. I believe the girl is to be the mother.
Mother of what?
It's the mark of the devil.
Hey! It's not real. It's not real. It's not real. It's not real. It's not real.
What's not real?
Who said that?
This is very real.
And we are back here on the Cinemania Nightmares show. We are now going to discuss for a little bit The First Omen. Listen, I don't know when this movie came out. I think it was like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. but Larry made a fool out of me on the box office show saying I haven't been watching nothing as far as horror. So I said, you know what? I'm booking a double feature today at Cinemark. It was great. I don't give that Cinemark theater enough flowers, man. It is a fantastic, fantastic theater. It's like spacey. It's a good screen. It's not fuzzy and fucking shit. Like, I love AMC, but like some of their non-IMAX. This is why I refuse to watch anything in AMC that's non-Dolby or IMAX. The screens are fuzzy and wonky, and I'm like, ah, fuck. But anyway, I watched the first Omen first today before I watched Abigail, and I was buzzing when the movie was over. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, man. It was very bombastic. I liked Immaculate a lot, but by the second act, I was like, brother, I mean, this thing just cleared Immaculate. But it's so crazy after watching this now how similar the two movies are.
I was gonna say it's funny you mentioned once the second act, because like the first act of both movies are the exact same.
Oh my god! Yeah, I was like, damn, like this is un. I was like, this is like literally uncanny a little bit how similar these movies are, and like, I was like, how did this happen? It's kind of like it kind of reminds me of when we had like White House Down and like Olympus Has Fallen at the same time. Then everybody was like baffled, and that's kind of how I feel about this. I mean, I still liked them both, but I did like First Omen both, just the way I like, you know,
it is just weird that they both came out within like a week or two of each other.
Yeah, it's
wild.
Yeah, it was just strange. I was like this. I was watching it start, and I was like, oh, she's arriving in town. I remember Sydney Sweeney arriving in town, all smiles and excited about life.
Both and, in Europe.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, is a language here again? Were they both in the same country?
I believe they're both in Italy, right?
Yeah, they're both in Italy. Like, both movies deal a lot with motherhood.
Yeah, it was
it's wild.
it was very like uncanny. I was like, was this supposed to be like this? Anyway, this is part of the reasons why I wish they would have just doubled their marketing the same way it's like a Barbenheimer or something. I don't know.
Immaculomen or like
something like that. What's the other way? The first, I don't know. I don't know. But,
well, there you go. Immaculomen is too late.
Yeah, I kind of like that one better. Okay, so let's get into just general thoughts of the movie. I'll start with you, Larry, this time. What did you think about The First Omen, if you even remember?
Yeah, I thought it was... I don't know. I thought it was solid. I think I'm probably the lowest on it out of us three. Now, look, so this movie, for the most part, I thought solid and, you know, it's good. But there are like two scenes in here that took me out. Like, when you're talking wild, I wasn't ready. I don't know why I wasn't ready. Maybe because like Immaculate, people kind of like hyped it up at being so wild. Yeah, but this movie, maybe I just didn't see enough reactions before that I was not anticipating the madness of some of the... This one takes birthing scenes to a whole nother level. Like, wow. I was shooketh. I could... It's like, oh, damn. Okay, we fully went there.
Because Immaculate doesn't show. Like, that main one, they don't really show it. It's just kind of hyper-fixated on Sydney Sweeney's reaction.
The only part in Immaculate that kind of had me shook was when she literally bit an umbilical cord.
Spoilers
for Immaculate. That's the moment that I was like, oh damn, I don't think I've ever seen something like that on screen.
I feel like that's something that you don't really see even in horror movies very often.
And then this movie was like, hey yo, hold up, we're gonna give you a little bit extra for your buck. But this movie, the main thing that I took from this movie was Nell Tigerfree, who is amazing. Man, like she gives and actually just maybe one of the first like just knockout performances of the year for me as our lead in The First Omen. She carries it. Like for me, she carried it. She was amazing. yeah, I don't know. It keeps the vibes. Part of the thing is with these movies, the story of The Omen is just so wild, just off the bat. Like this demonic child, Damien, like all this. It's wild. Like it's a wild story. So to get the prequel of it is also, you're just like, wow, this is wild. But yeah, I think they do a good enough job of keeping the general tone of the original, like trying to keep that kind of aspect to it. And yeah, so I think it was good. It's definitely probably the second best Omen movie there is. Like, I mean, not that that's a hard task to complete.
No, not really.
But yeah, it's definitely up there, like with the first. Now, Tyler can talk about how they change the lore and change some aspects.
Yeah,
he got yelled at about it in his comments.
I did. You would have thought I wrote the movie the way that people were reacting to the changes to the lore and the jackal and the additional stuff in the that could set up a potential, I guess, in between cool franchise. I guess.
Oh yeah, me and Dwayne were talking about that.
The brother
before this.
Before I get to Tyler's thoughts, I'm gonna lose it. I know I am. I get so worked up and then I lose my train of thought. Brother, listen to me, Hollywood. Okay,
I didn't hear this, so this is new to me.
Oh
well.
Yeah, I was talking to Larry before you came on. Okay, listen to me, Hollywood. I'm sick of this shit. Okay, if I can get like fucking 85,000 Transformers, there's a new one coming out. If I can get like 85,000 these Disney Marvel, you know, if I feel like if Disney and Sony can make a deal for Spider-Man. I need me like some type of team up here with these nuns slash whatevers. Like, okay, what I need. This is what I need. Okay, I need Cecilia from Immaculate. I need Sister Irene from The Nun 2, and I need Margarita from The First Omen to team up. I don't know who they're facing. I don't care. I just was what
Satan,
I want.
Satan, okay? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Just the jackal. I don't know how you do it. That's just what I want. I mean, because the last act of this movie was so nuts and twists and turns and regarding like just like reveals. I thought those were all great. And I thought the way it ended was it was teetering on like a really like not fun ending for me, as far as like our lead is just gonna like not make it out of this, and just like,
I mean, it's the first Omen, like it's not gonna have a happy ending,
right? But I was like, you know, I want them to get out of this somehow. And spoilers, I mean, it's been out for a while, like they do, and like,
which is weird because
it's very weird. But I was like, okay, she's out of this. Like, listen, I need like another one. I don't know what they're doing again. I need another one. Then Larry was like, well, yeah, it's The Omen. Like, no, Larry, I need like another one before The Omen again. I need like another one of these. But
there's definitely is a lot of room that can be had between the end of this movie and the beginning of The Omen. Yes. there's a lot of story that you could squeeze in there.
All I'm saying is that I was just absolutely hyped for like, I really enjoyed the movie. I thought just the scares were great. I thought the imagery was great. I mean, the beast in here is like disgusting. The reveals, I guess, in here, and I haven't been spoiled by it, which was nice and stuff. Seeing all of that, you know, the way it kind of wraps itself together. There's a lot of like shocking scenes here. I'll say like a love interest. The way that kind of wraps up was really, really good to me. Yeah, I liked, I don't know the name because I don't have the IMDb page up, but the other priest, the good priest,
oh,
I liked
no.
him a lot.
Not Ralph Innocent.
Yeah, I liked him a lot.
From The Witch with his amazing voice.
Oh yeah, the voice is like, maybe it was the voice, but yeah, I liked him a lot. He's like an ally in this movie. I thought he was really good. And of course, our lead was absolutely fantastic. There's a moment in here where they have to do a lot of body horror at the end, and it teeters from like being comedic, but it's so horrifying at once you realize what's happening to her that I thought this was way really a lot more effective than like just screaming in my face as far as Immaculate goes. Sorry. But I thought that all was like just done really, really well. And I thought the score and the sound design was also really great. Tyler, any thoughts on the first Omen
from you? Yeah, I mean, I agree with basically a lot of the stuff that you guys had already said. I think it was cool that it kind of kept that 70s feel to it, the horror aspect, because you don't really see that a lot these days. And going back to the, you know, literally just evoking what made the original Omen in the 70s so creepy to me. A lot of that slow burning mystery. It was a little bit weird because it was like deja vu watching Immaculate then watching First Omen, and then eventually they do deviate a little bit, but for a good chunk of the beginning it was a bit odd where it was like, okay, is this gonna literally just be the exact same movie? But the scares, I thought overall, once they start ramping up more, they did get more and more horrific. And I'm sure there's probably a bunch of people that are probably going to be, you know, roll their eyes or, you know, call me woke or whatever. But I think it's really actually fascinating when it comes to the stuff revolving around, you know, women's autonomy and pregnancy and all that stuff. And the body horror, you know, the horror of the, you know, and the stuff in the third act with the pregnancies and all that stuff. I think that brutality and part of why it is so much more nasty and visceral is because they got a female director. This is the fact, which is what we did, which was not the case in Immaculate. Immaculate was directed by a man. Mm-hmm. I feel like having that female spin on a lot of that horror added to not just the brutality, the nastiness of it all, but it made it feel a lot more realistic, I guess you could say, because it does have that female touch to it, which we haven't seen before in the Omen franchise. So that was very wild to see, especially as a man. So some of those sequences, the birthing stuff and the demons, definitely traumatized me.
Of the stuff
I've seen so far this year, there's certain sequences in the first Omen that definitely are going to stick with me probably for the entire year. Same with Immaculate had a couple sequences, particularly one we already brought up with the umbilical cord, that is probably going to stick with me, because that's just like that's a wild decision to make. And then the stuff involving the hand coming out of, you know, places that hands generally don't come out of was the shot that I definitely gotta give them kudos for thinking of that as a thing to do in a film, a Disney film technically, because it's, you know, 20th century.
It is. Oh my god, it is.
But you would think, you know, everybody hates Disney and how, you know, they're trying to sanitize everything, and they have this movie where a freaking demon hand comes out.
They have Poor Things in this.
Including Poor Things. Yeah, that's right. And we already talked about Nell Tiger Free a whole bunch. It was funny joking about it back when the movie came out, when Larry and I were talking about it, you know, because we're still talking about Game of Thrones, how she's Myrcella Baratheon in Game of Thrones. It was funny talking to Larry about reminding him of that, because that was such a long time ago. But I was really impressed with her performance. I would probably say it's the next performance in a long line of performances where people give these amazing performances in horror movies, but then they will just get completely ignored once the awards season kicks in. We've seen it like time and time again with Toni Collette and Hereditary, Lupita Nyong'o and Us. I have to imagine it's probably going to be the exact same thing.
Flo and Midsommar.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even add her into the bunch too. Usually there's at least one, and I mean, there's still a lot of movies left to go this year, but I feel like of the female performances I've seen this year, but I mean, at least in the horror space, she gives the best one so far.
It's definitely my favorite performance of the year so far.
It's really good.
I thought she was really, and what a name. Nell Tiger Free.
Yeah, I actually did Google at one point, like, is that actually her name?
Yeah,
that,
what a that, bar.
Like,
what
is that bar. Like, is it, is that a stage name or no?
Yeah. I was like, this is, yeah, that's, she's
wild. Yeah. I could not, but I was like shook once Tyler told me that was Myrcella Baratheon. I had to look at, I was like, wait a minute now. We got a Game of Thrones reunion with her and Charles Dance, and Charles Dance gave us an Underworld reunion with him and Bill Nighy. Okay.
It was funny because a lot of the cast was like Game of Thrones related people. Like Bill Nighy was in Game of Thrones briefly. Mm-hmm. I think we said that as well. Ralph Ineson was in
Game of Thrones. Ralph. Yes.
Ralph was in it, and I remember it was Bill Nighy was in Harry Potter.
Yeah, he chose the other British.
Yes, he went Harry Potter, and of course he's also like you know Pirates of the Caribbean. But
and her character was from Massachusetts. I was living.
Oh? Does that make you want to like follow in that footsteps, Dwayne?
Not really, but
come on, you can father a demon child in Italy.
Listen, I do anything for Margarita. So
I think after this, though, I mean, maybe Manda will disagree specifically, but yeah. I think we need to like stop putting everything in Rome.
Yeah, I think we just need a little break of this this type of movie, if you get what I'm saying.
Well, not even just that movie. I just mean like every movie. It feels like every couple of months in the last couple of years, I've seen Rome.
I mean, it's because that's the problem is we're doing a lot of Catholic
Christianity.
Catholicism horror recently, and so they're always like, let's go to Rome, like it has to take place in Italy if it's doing with priests and nuns.
It's the only place in the world, apparently, according to Hollywood, that has Catholic people.
So it's like, all right, well, no, we don't have to go to Rome, but okay, sure.
But I just mean that like every couple of months it's like this was in there was stuff. This was in Rome. Immaculate was in Rome. Godzilla X Kong had a sequence in Rome. Fast X had a sequence in Rome.
That's true.
Mission Impossible had a sequence in Rome. I'm tired of Rome right now.
Ooh, he said, keep that damn Italian food and keep us out of Rome.
Listen, I'm part Italian. I love my people. But I really need to just stop seeing Rome for a little bit right now.
Now, Dwayne, how come you don't want these nuns to all team up and take on the nun herself, Miss Valak?
I guess that would make more sense.
Just feel like the nun needs a little bit more help. I know she's like Thanos, but I feel like I need all of them to team up. I want to see Damien, the nun, and like the jackal versus Irene, Cecilia, and Margarita.
It's a shame that the horror genre doesn't really have very many team-ups.
That's what I'm saying. That's what we're lacking. That's why I'm sick of this bullshit.
I mean, we've been teasing them for forever. I mean, the most recent one, you know, there was, you know, they're still talking about Megan versus Chucky. I mean, that was
Chucky, which...
But I would love
Chucky don't get whopped.
Oh?
It depends. I mean, right now it's not really fair because he's like 4,000 years old. But
he's fighting on Twitter. He's fighting for his life on Twitter.
He just dropped a nuke in the show.
Now, want good old Chris McNeil as part with Ellen Bernstein?
Oh, not the current one where she's blind.
Jesus. You don't want her to be part of. You don't want her to be part of the mission.
No. You gotta get the nuns together. The nun,
she's
young
like
nuns.
An honorary one. In that last Exorcist, they tried to make her like a exorcist guru.
The problem with this is the problem with my dream too is that these are all different studios by different studios. Every single one. Yeah. There's one of them is Warner Brothers. The other one's Universal. This one's 20th is whatever.
20th century, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, man.
You got to get them all under like one umbrella. You got to think of like, you got to name a bunch of characters for Universal or Warner Brothers.
So I just feel like Hollywood is not being fun anymore. You know, we got Freddy versus Jason at one point. What are we doing, man? Let's get going.
if it's 20th century, it could be like what? First Omen characters, Xenomorphs.
Oh my word.
the Predator.
Man. I don't know. I don't know. I want some more.
At the very least, I think we could get a sequel. I mean, they've done, come on now, they've done a million and one freaking Omen movies. Like, they've done a lot of Omen movies at this point. And they've all been terrible, and they didn't make any money, so that's not a criteria. So you can give us a sequel to the first Omen.
Especially because I wasn't, I don't think they were either. The reactions to it were great. Like, it was, when I saw,
I was shocked,
yeah, when that Rotten Tomatoes score came out, I was like, man, this is like, I was really surprised that the first Omen was doing that well. So
it just seemed like a movie that was destined for failure.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't. The people were like, why is this actually good?
Yeah, especially after, like, not Midsommar, after Immaculate. It's like, yeah, you would think that it would, you know, just completely bomb. It didn't. What did it do? About 8 million when it came out.
Yeah, which is not bad.
Which is not bad, you know. It's more than immaculate. Anyway, so I think there's room for another one.
A midquel. What would you call it though? Because it's like
the second Omen.
The first Omen two. Like
the second Omen.
Let's get it. That's
two Omen, two Furious. Like,
God.
Because they introduced like a girl, and I was like, "What's this about?"
He's got a twin. Yeah.
That ending was, I was like, what is going on here? I mean, do I need to rewatch The Omen? Did I miss that
Was
much,
that not movie? Like an Avengers type ending? Ooh, they have a name.
Avengers.
Come on. They literally cut to black. They have a name for him. And she's like, what's the name? Damien. And I was like, oh,
well, of course, because they have to play into the beginning of the first, the actual first Omen, the 70s one, where they give up the actual kid.
Yeah.
But then they're like, here's your other kid.
Listen, I know I can't get my nuns team up, okay? I know I can't get that. But Warner Brothers, if this next Conjuring is not a bombastic versus movie, I'm going to be absolutely furious. I don't want the Warrens to go into their house and investigate. I need them to confront the nun, Annabelle. I need Sister Irene there somehow. I don't give a damn how Slender you get
man,
there.
Come on, you've I been need, chilling yeah, on the side. What was his name?
The Crooked Man or
crooked
something
man,
like that.
Yeah. I mean, that movie freaking, got canceled. Bring him back.
Right. I mean, that Annabelle Comes Home movie was like setting up so much stuff. Where's the bride?
What the hell are we doing? My personal favorite was the suit of the haunted samurai armor. But
yeah, the samurai, the fucking wolf.
That guy with the coins for eyes.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing, Warner Bros? I don't. If I see a trailer for The Conjuring 4 and them mofos are in another house, and I know, man.
I know it'll be like, you know what, if we can bring Irene in and she hasn't really aged, can we bring Michael Cimino back too? I know it's a long time and he won't have aged either.
Bob's got balls.
What's the girl's name from the little girl who was in everything?
McKenna Grace.
Yeah, let's get her in there.
A Ghostbuster. Let her bust some ghosts.
Well, that whole with McKenna Grace, it's so weird because they did that movie. They did Annabelle Comes Home where they recast the Warren's daughter for her, and then they brought back the original.
That was one. We'll bring them both back. It's a multiversal.
Oh my god!
Event.
I'll die.
The Warrens are their canon event. I don't know, something, man. I need something else besides. Oh my god, come on.
Okay, Dwayne.
Our other house.
Listen, you're saying all this. I need you to remember. So when Lorraine goes full Avenger in the next movie, I want to hear nothing. Okay.
It's fair.
When she turns into a legit superhero in the next movie,
you know,
I want to hear nothing. Because
in The Conjuring, when I did my rewatch of that, I was like, you know, it's kind of going hard a little bit, man. She's using these powers and shit.
You wanted to go like full, like that scene in the end of X-Men Apocalypse.
Yes,
she turns into Professor Xavier.
Yeah, she needs to go full Dark Phoenix on this shit.
She went all Phoenix on Apocalypse and roast.
That's what I need. I need all of them. Listen, when the Nun 2, when they're holding that damn Mjolnir device, I was like, this is gas.
She needs the power of Sister Irene to finally banish the demons.
I mean, come on. And then the post credit is like Avengers. Come on, man. Is it not? They call the Warrens. What do you need? And they're like, somebody on the phone's like, we need you. They're like, we're on our way. I was like, oh, this is fucking insane, man.
It's also tough because like they're supposed to be like, quote unquote, I mean, they are real people, but
quote unquote real cases.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're real people, and apparently these cases did happen, but you know, they Hollywoodify a lot of the stuff in the stories.
Listen, man, this is just what I need. I'm just letting y'all know, okay?
Well, yeah, we can get the, like I said, we'll get a midquel, maybe a midquel. Well, I guess that's the proper term if you have like another ongoing Omen franchise in the Omen franchise while Damien's like growing up and murdering people. There's just another side adventure where his twin sister that he never brought up in the entire franchise is just off terrorizing people potentially.
I legit was like, wait a minute. There wasn't a twin, was there? Like, do I really not
remember? That's what I thought. I was like,
do I just not remember the Omen literally at all? Because it is
never, to my knowledge. I mean, it's been a little bit since I've watched every movie, but to my knowledge, the Omen franchise, I mean, that was the thing that everybody yelled at me about, was the whole lore behind Damien's birth. He has to, you know, it was a jackal and all, you know, and all that stuff. And then they changed the jackal stuff, and everybody yelled at me like I wrote the movie. but they didn't really bring up anything else in the movies about him having any sort of lineage, you know, or siblings or anything like that. It was kind of just like, Damien is the Antichrist. We're gonna keep trying to kill him and fail. And that's basically every movie until the end, and then he does eventually die. But that, I mean, spoilers for I guess the third Omen movie that came out decades ago, if you really cared that much. But he did eventually lose.
I think the reason why I get so giddy for these movies is that it just feels like horror is like just doing so well right now, for the most part.
I mean, there's some people out there that are mad. They're like, they need to stop.
Oh, that I was bullshit. I was like, brother, listen, I like, just cause your fucking action movies and fucking rom coms aren't really hitting the way they used to, my horror movies are just fine. It's okay if I get like three of them a month. I what the fuck?
It's the horror movie. It's somehow the horror movie's fault.
Yeah, what the hell? The movies are dying. There's too much horror. That's what we're doing now? Now that Marvel's is in shambles, you're like, it's the horrors.
It's the horror movies where even the horrible ones that come out usually at least double their budget.
Yeah, right. Like, exactly.
I mean, even this review here, I mean, we have two very different movies, you know, like tonally, they're complete, like they're not alike really at all, other than they both have some like blood, I don't know, a couple scares.
messed up violence.
But these two movies are nothing alike. They're both horror and they're both lit, like they're both good, they got great reception, people are enjoying them. That's like the great thing about horror, you can release very different horror movies every single week and not get tired of them.
and it was great. It was great. Before, I watched two horror movies today. And before it, I realized that there is so much coming out. And I'm like, oh, I am so hyped. We had that Killer's POV movie coming out.
Oh, yeah.
We have Cuckoo with Hunter Schafer. We got The Strangers coming out. We got The Watchers coming out from M. Night Shyamalan, who's also releasing Trap or whatever. There's just so much stuff coming out, and I'm just so hyped about it. That Speak No Evil trailer was nuts that I saw today. Long Legs, of course, that's like my most anticipated movie right now. It's just, there's a lot of stuff coming out, and why the fuck would I say no guys, let's no, I don't want 10, I want like 2.
Yeah, the only one out of the ones you mentioned I'm not that excited for is Speak No Evil, just because it's a remake, and there's no reason for it to be really be a remake, and the trailer gave away basically everything about the movie anyway.
Well,
people that haven't seen the remake don't know that, of course.
Yeah,
it's like they gave you everything in that trailer. Yeah. That kind of made me mad.
Also, The Strangers too. Why are they changing so much?
There's three of them.
I know. I just like. I feel like they're trying to change so much of why people love The Strangers, and I'm like, why? It's the if you why would they suddenly change their vocab? What they're, I don't know. I was like, stop changing the lines.
Well, they're like full-on slasher villains now.
Yeah, well, like, the iconic line, I think they even changed the name of, like, when the girl answers the door. I think they say something completely different, too. It's still the Tam kind of, like, it, I feel like it ends differently. I'm getting really annoyed. But, like, the ending line of the trailer, like, why would you change that? Because you were here? What? What the fuck is that?
They'll stumble onto it eventually. They're still working. Maybe they're still working on it. I don't know. They'll be like,
We're like in rehearsal. They're just like, let's change that line to home.
Well, that's what I mean. They're working on it. Maybe they're like, all right, this doesn't hit as much. Let's get the next time.
Next house.
When we start raising hell on Liv Tyler, we'll get it. We'll get it down.
Yeah. But horror is here to stay. It's a really good year for horror. It seems like there's more and more coming out, and I'm so hyped, because usually when it comes to horror, we'd have, okay, here's one in January, okay, here's another one in March, and then here's like some more in August, and then here's like two in October. We got like we had like almost like a dozen stuff left to come out still, and I'm just
As far as horror goes, like, I don't remember off the top of my head. Maybe you guys do, but do you know what horror movie, like, what's the big horror movie for, like, the actual, like, Halloween season now? Because they basically scrapped the Exorcist sequel. I mean, it's not happening as far as I know. And then they delayed Saw 11 to next year. So. I don't know
what's coming out.
So unless, like, is there a big horror movie? Like,
Joker 2 is considered.
You count Joker.
Terrifier 3 is what I'm seeing.
I guess that could help.
There's nothing. What the fuck's going on here?
It's a travesty. Oh, that's
Dwayne is about to lose his mind.
Because I know what you're going to say.
Oh, Dwayne's about to be mad.
Do it, because I know what you're going
to
say.
Dwayne's going to have to fold and watch a Terrifier 3 this year?
Let's do it. Those movies are really messed up. I mean, you thought fucking First Omen was bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I have not watched Terrifier 2.
Yeah,
I turned Terrifier 1 off when, like, he's splitting a homegirl in two while she's naked. I mean,
the second one's worse.
At that point, this is a porn fantasy, and you're living out your fantasy, and you're weird. I don't know, dude. I was just like,
there's even more messed up, gory violence.
I saw the scalping scene. It was all over Twitter. I was like, what the fuck is going on? He
broke that woman's legs and arms scalped her, and then like rubbed salt in the wounds. And
yeah, it's not for me. It's just not for me.
I guess Terrifier 3 is like the big horror movie this Halloween season, because The Exorcist Believer was so bad, and then they couldn't agree on ideas for Saw 11.
The body and the blood. Anyway, let's get out of here.
The body and the blood.
That is our reviews, everyone, for Abigail and The First Omen, and I guess like an extra discussion on the current state of horror, which is great. Ooh. And that is it, everyone. Thank you guys for joining us. I'll go around, get everyone's social media. So start with you, Larry.
Yeah, you can find me over on Twitter at ChiliBoyYT, and then on Instagram and YouTube, both at ChiliBoy Productions.
All right, and Tyler.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at It's Tyler Calvert, and also on Instagram as well. And then YouTube, it's just my name, Tyler Calvert. You know, got reviews for both of these films, actually, Abigail and The First Omen. So check those out. I also, you know, speaking of horror, you know, doing a lot of Chucky coverage right now with the part 2 of season 3 ongoing. And that's been a very wild ride. You know, we talked about it a little bit earlier with Megan getting a shout out. And like I said, also, Chucky just dropped a nuke in the most recent episode. So that was also pretty wild.
All right, everyone, you can follow me on Twitter at Cinemaniac94. Follow podcast, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CinemaniaWorld. Thank you guys for joining us. My name is Dwayne. That was Tyler and Larry. This has been an episode of Cinemania Nightmares. We'll talk to you guys soon.